This portion of the Tom and Curly Show brought to you by Bucky's. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. For nearly 50 years, Bucky's Auto Service Centers have been taking care of your car. Thank you, Bucky's Auto Service Centers, for sponsoring this portion of the Tom and Curly Show.
I didn't realize that Garrison was back allowed on the air.
I'm going to dive into the pond now, Tom, and put on my Speedo and run my hand up against your back. Time it is! Oh, yeah, old-timey radio. That's what we did there for you. All righty. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. UW grad students striking. They strike today. They struck yesterday. I think they're out there yesterday. Here's what they get. They make anywhere. They make about, they make an hour, 30-some bucks an hour. They work a 20, can work a 20-hour week. They're involved in a whole bunch of stuff there at the university, and they just want more money, right?
That's right. Some health insurance, some medical costs. They want certain fees waived. Right now, so I was one of these students. They're teaching assistants. I would teach writing courses either in the English department or in alignment with the Jackson School of International Studies or in sociology department. That you are doing a full class's work. You teach the class. You collect the papers, you correct the papers and all this, and you grade the students. And one of the things that universities like doing is they use the grad students so they don't have to pay the faculty members
right.
as much. I mean, in effect, we're doing the work of a lot of what used to go to faculty members.
But if I'm a dad and I'm paying for my kid to go there and I'm out of state, I'm paying $51,000, I'm having a 22-year-old kid teach my 18-year-old kid?
Sometimes I would guess they're more like 24 and 25-year-olds, going through the process. But some, yeah, you could, if you're a hotshot student, you could be as young as that. Now, yeah, they usually have you teach. There are various things there. Also, I don't know about the sciences. They have research assistants, too. And so
you'd
be doing research and not in the classroom. I'm just saying in my own experience.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea here is that the university is getting a break. And so maybe some of that break, of instead of having a full-blown professor teach a class, maybe you have deserve more for it. It's a bit like college scholarships for athletes. They play a football, they play on the football team. The football team makes millions, but you don't see as much of that money. They
do
pay these grad students. It's just a one-day strike, in effect, to say that we want a little more pay. They want 3 to 6% increases, and I think the university is saying we'll give you 2% increases.
So they make $25,000 a year.
Yeah, between 23 and 35, depending
Let's go 35. Yeah. It'll make my argument better. So they make $35,000. They're from out of state. They get $51,000 worth of free education. Not free. Yeah, free education. They'll pay for that, right?
Yeah.
So now they're at $81,000. They have an $81,000 job. They're making $81,000 and they're 24 years old. That's pretty good.
Well, only because that you take away the tuition.
Take away the tuition. So now they're making $35,000 and they're paying $51,000 for tuition. Now they're at a deficit.
Yeah.
I'm saying if you include the tuition, which is a giant Benny, you get tuition for free.
Where do you get $51,000 for
I'm looking at University of Washington tuition. In-state is $26,000. Out-of-state is $51,159.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, but then the thing is that you wouldn't probably come from out of state if that's the situation that's being handled. Now, you're right. It's their choice, and they don't want to go to the University of Washington. They can go elsewhere. But the idea is that they feel like Seattle's getting more and more expensive. You get more as a TA in Seattle and New York than you would if you were in Omaha because the Omaha living wage is lower because of that. But, yeah, I mean, you could argue that, you don't have to do it, and all they're saying is that we think that we are bringing a lot of value to the university. If all of a sudden all 4,000 of these graduate students walked away, the hurt on the university would be quite significant.
Yes.
Because suddenly they'd have to figure out a way to pay for all these students in their classrooms and or whatever research.
I'm out of it, all this conversation. Yeah. But do people are upset that they're spending money to send their kid to a school, and then a 23-year-old with his lifetime of experience as a teacher is standing up in front of these kids teaching a class that he took just 4 or 5 years ago, or she took four? Does that bother people that you have kids teaching kids?
It could be, John. But remember, if you're in a major, most of these are the general assignment classes, so they're freshmen and sophomores that they're teaching.
Yeah.
But it is true that you know, you may feel like, well, I'm paying for a professor to teach a class. I've got to tell you, though, that a lot of students respond better to somebody who is 6 or 7 years older than them than 36 and 37 years older than them, that they might even get a better education.
Okay.
But remember, I was teaching things like writing and literature at the freshman and sophomore levels, and they get the real full-blown professors at the higher up. So
my sister was an adjunct professor,
okay,
which means add-on. She said she had no respect at the university. She taught at Rutgers, right, and she taught at a couple other colleges.
Those are professors where they say, oh, look, we have 100 more people signed up for biology class. We need to get an adjunct professor to help to relieve some of the load. Yeah.
Okay.
So she might object too. She said, listen, you're benefiting hugely on me because it would cost.
Oh, the pay was crap.
Exactly. The pay isn't very well.
Yeah, by the time she figured out what it was costing her in gas, she goes, well, I don't need this. And then all the time to grade all the papers.
Yes.
You know, she's teaching a 101 English class. She said, it was so painful. Let's see. The flow of refugees to the United States has slowed to nearly a halt. I wonder why they're not coming. I guess maybe they're not welcome, or the latest move is the Trump administration is separating families, right? They're putting
this
is new.
This is a new thing.
This is new. Mom or dad are here. They take the kids away from the parents, and they're putting them in warehouses, which are on military bases.
Yeah. I don't know how. I mean, Jeff Sessions, where's his conscience?
Power move, Tom.
Well, it is. It's
you want to go to the United States? Yeah. Got news for you. Because, boy, that word spreads quickly. They're going to take your kids, and they're going to put them in a warehouse, and you're going to be over here, and your kids are going to be over here. They just want to make it as uncomfortable for you as possible coming into the country.
Yeah. So, in effect, what this article is about is that what the president can't do legally, he is doing bureaucratically, in that he has slowed everything, the vetting. He's cut down the number of the staff that goes ahead and does these clearance interviews, so they take longer and longer, and then they're requiring extra vetting, so that at this point, so for instance, he capped the number of people, the refugees coming to this country, at 45,000, which was like cutting it in half. Yeah. Out of that 45,000 cap, we only have 13,000 even bothering to go through it. We've made it so almost impenetrable to get through the vetting process.
Good.
In effect, I know it's
good.
Terrible. It's
Tom,
it's
we have
un-American.
A border. Respect our border. They
no,
don't.
It is
they
a cut.
Hold on. They don't. They come in. You make it uncomfortable for them. They don't come.
No. These are refugees applying. They're not sneaking over. They're doing everything right.
They're claiming refugee status.
Yes.
Yes.
And there are 23 million refugees in this country.
Yes.
And the United States, which is a big country that can handle a lot more than other countries, are doing nothing.
Uh-huh.
It's embarrassing for us vis-a-vis the world, I think. And I think it's a shame. But again, this is the president we have. And
he got the playbook from Obama and realized, why should I bother going and dealing with Congress? I could just come up with these things on my own.
Well,
Same thing Barack Obama did, Tom.
No,
exact same move.
First off, it has nothing to know. He's cutting. That's a bureaucratic move. He tried to do this legally, and it's illegal.
Yeah.
And so he's doing it through, forcing people to go through so many vetting operations. They have this entire, the article starts off with this entire assembly line of people in Fayetteville, Arkansas, in Columbus, Ohio, and Houston, where they have all these people ready to help, and they've got all this stuff, and they said, and the refugees aren't coming. Where are they?
Right. They have a picture in the New York Times of a warehouse just full of a whole bunch of food and toys and everything else, but there's nobody there to have to give it to. California, I think last week, Governor Jerry Brown signed into law that any new home, I think starting next year.
In effect, 2 years.
Two years from now, will have an additional $10,000 cost added to the home. So if you're trying to apply for that loan and you just can't quite get there, the house now may be $10,000 out of reach for those folks. But for everybody else that can afford it, congratulations, you now have solar panels on the roof of your house.
That's right. It's expected to increase the cost of a home between $8,000 and $12,000, depending on the size of the home. However, they say the average, it'll add up to about $40 an average month payment extra, but it'll save consumers $80 a month on heating, cooling, and lighting bills. So you are, in effect, coming out ahead every month to the tune of $40.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they think they can justify this economically. Now, I don't know about the down payment issue, if that is a concern or not, but they say that this is a good thing for homeowners and new homeowners as well, but it will initially jack up the price of the overall house.
Yes.
But still, so that's why they're doing it, because they say it is going to be cheaper, and this does seem to be the wave of the future. Even the construction industry now, they say, is on board with that, and they sort of use solar capability as a selling point for their construction. So this is just, it's a big move in that this is the first state. There have been other states that have been nibbling around the edges of this. New Jersey, Massachusetts, D.C., and Hawaii are moving in that direction. But this is the first time in a big state like California that says, okay, now from now on, you have to
and
have
no subsidies, power. Right? We're not picking winners over losers. Just everybody gets the same thing. You can pick whatever solar system you want on top of your house. But they're not giving you a break on the $8,000 or the $10,000, right?
We're not I assume that. Not, because this is a statewide industry-wide requirement. So it is a big move for the solar power industry too. That you get a big state. So as California goes, so do many other states. You just think it's a bad idea?
No, I don't. Okay. I had a solar system on top of the house. We had the second largest one in Sammamish.
Wow.
It was huge.
Yeah.
$50,000 thing installed on the roof. It was amazing. Our electric bill went from like 100 and some bucks a month down to like 30, and then the state was stealing money from poor people and giving it to us so that we could also get a tax credit for the amount of money, the amount of energy that we sent back to the state, because we didn't use it all. So then it goes back in, and then they pay you for that at an inflated rate.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be an inflated rate, but that makes perfect sense to me. If you create, that's how it works so well in Germany right now, is that, people have houses, and they still try to conserve on energy, and then they sell the energy to the state for others. That's a good move.
The 20 years, if you could live 20 years longer, I know you answer yes to this. If you could live 20 years longer, would you? I would say no.
Why?
Because if I'm in relatively good health, up until about 70, as soon as I feel it's starting to fade, bang, I'm done.
Okay.
I'm gonna take a big cocktail of all sorts of drugs and just finish my life.
You will?
Yes.
So your eyesight starts going worse?
Worse.
Because that'll inevitably happen.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think at 70 you won't feel like life at 71 is worth living?
I'm just saying, I'm going to be like this lady, Tom. So the difference is that physically I live my life. You're a very, very passive person. You sit most of the day.
Not true.
It is true.
I am so
intellectually
engaged.
You sit the majority of your day.
Well,
you don't use your body. That's why you said the other day, I could have my head in a great big jar and I would be perfectly content. And then I asked you, what about the poor person has to carry you around? Too bad.
A minute.
Yes.
I love my body and I get a lot of pleasure out of my body. But
Tom, some people might have eaten breakfast at this point.
We don't want to
hear about you getting pleasure out of your body.
You make it sound like you don't.
Hold on. There's a difference. Look at mine. Andrew, wake up in there. Please cut that part out of the podcast. Tom talks about getting pleasure out of his body.
What you're suggesting what you're suggesting is that I want to live my life only as a head in a jar. That's not true. If it's a way to extend my life, if I'm going to die, let's just say at 85, and I could extend my life another 20 years, but it would be dependent on me just as a head in a jar so I could find out what's going on in the world and I could still read and all that kind of stuff, that would be worth it. To you, it wouldn't be worth it because you have no life of the mind.
Right.
No.
The difference is you live a cerebral, see the world through your brain, right?
Well, yeah.
Right. But, I mean, and you're through a cerebral set of biases and prejudices that you carry with you as a liberal, right?
It's called intelligence.
Right. Here you are. Oh, right. This is intelligence.
Yes.
Right. Tom, you don't know the real world. You and I are going to take it. You know what? I thought of this yesterday while I was on my motorcycle.
My world is every bit as real as yours.
Yep.
They're different worlds.
You and I are going to go on a field trip.
Or Laurel.
You and I are going to go on a field trip. Will you go on a field trip with me? We're going to go down to one of these homeless crap camps, okay?
Yeah.
And we're going to knock on tents, and we'll get a chance. The two of us will have an opportunity to talk to some of the people in some of these tents. Because here you and I are in our ivory tower at Cairo Radio, destroying the Dory Monson show when it comes to ratings. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Our ivory tower is bigger than your ivory tower.
Absolutely. Our ivory tower is looking down. We're throwing buckets of urine onto yours, Dory. So here's the thing. You and I should go out and see the world because you have you look at the world through an intellectual gaze, right? Isn't it through a focus of the intellect? In college?
I mean, I value the life of the intellect, yes.
Right. But you experience everybody else's life through either the arts or through reading and things like that.
Well, yeah, but okay.
How many poor friends do you have? Desperately poor people associate with?
Not that many. Okay. I would say three, four.
Okay.
Don't
look at Andrew. No, that's not fair. He's a young kid coming
up. Oh, if you can count them, all my kids' friends, all four then.
The idea is that you would want to live an extra 20 years. I want to kick out early. There's a woman who's 129 years old. That's what she says. And Andrew, the producer, filling in for Patrick, who's now going to be a cop, so it doesn't believe the woman's 129. It's like,
I don't know where you
give her that. You said that's bullcrap.
I said stronger than that.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
That's because Andrew also has a life of the mind, John. You ought to use yours.
Tom, nobody I'm going to get the lady wants to say she's 129. I'm going to let her have
it. Okay, go for it.
Okay, so she's 129, and she says that when they ask, hey, what's the secret to life? Is it what's the secret to happiness in life? What did she say, Tom? Did you read it?
She didn't. Yeah, I read it. She didn't say it was a secret to life. All she says was, this is my lengthy life. Is not a gift from God. It's a punishment from God because I haven't been happy a single day in my life.
Not one happy day.
Now, she might have been hyperbolic like you often are, John. Uh-huh. But the idea that a woman maybe that a woman can get through life as long as that. So if she's not 129, she could easily be 100 at least. Mm-hmm. The fact, could your life be lengthened and driven by the fact that you are mad at the world or unhappy at the world? And that's what keeps you going. Now, my guess is that you talk to her at 30 or 50 or whatever. She might not have said the same thing. But at 129, in quotation marks, I think it's refreshing to hear somebody say that.
Would you there's new research out there, and there's some medical advances that it's allowing you to give your dog a pill that could have your dog have an additional 5 years of life.
Yes. And the idea is that could, if it works, so right now it works for insects and it works even a little bit for mice, that if you can develop it, they're now working in dogs. They say the interesting thing about dogs is dogs have a life similar enough to ours. In fact, they spend it in the same kind of environment we do, that if it works for dogs, it might work for us as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think a lot of people would probably love to extend their dog's life. And this is one thing I wanted to sort of correct you, John. What this idea does, this experiment they're working on with dogs, it would extend your life. Maybe they're guessing 15 years. I mean, it's highly speculative at this point, but that it would be mostly healthy. I'm not sure that anybody wants to be, even me, a brain in a jar if my brain's not working.
Oh, right.
The idea is that this will kind of extend a relatively healthy life.
Yeah.
So at 70, if you could live a relatively healthy life for another 10 years, I think you would snap it up, and I think we would do that for our pets as well.
I still go back to my dad talked about in the village and the rock.
Okay.
Right, you know it.
Yes.
Right, and there's a big rock there. And when you get to the point in your life where you can't pick up the big rock, that means you're of no help or assistance to the rest of the tribe.
Yeah.
So then once you can't pick up the rock, they give you a little bag of water and beans or something like that, and off you go.
Larry in West Seattle is cursing you at this very
I know, but that's because I know. Because his crew always wants to have him attempt to pick up the rock. Because you realize, at that point, I'm in no good to anybody, so I'm going to leave.
Yes.
So I've dropped my standard. I'm no longer concerned about trying to run a 7-minute mile. Like, okay, I'm happy with an 8-minute mile. But there'd be some place. I saw it with my dad. He said, I'm done. My body is weak. Yes. It is failing me. The joy I used to get of going out and playing golf or even going for a walk, I can't do it. I'm too tired. I can't even walk down the aisle to pick up milk and magnesia.
Yeah.
Right? I got constipation. I haven't pooped in like 3 weeks. I'm like, okay, Dad,
get
enough.
Put that out of the podcast, Andrew.
Yeah. So, it's my father's dying words, Tom.
Yes. Well, I'm glad they were well spent. Well, the thing is, John, though, but yeah, so your health, living longer isn't just the fact of living longer. The idea is these new things that they're working on could make you live, you could be healthy. You could die at 80 instead of 70. I think you'd be okay with that as long as you were healthy enough to pick up that rock. I just suggest to you that you might find enjoyment in not being able to do all the physical prowess is not the only thing you can enjoy in life. And if once those muscles fade, you can still have the life of the mind that you'd get kicked out.
That would be something new, wouldn't it? We'll come right back. We'll find out how Tom pleasures himself with his own body. We've got that coming up. Plus, also, that was the craziest
was
thing
worse.
You've ever seen. All right. Yes. Changing gears. Does a college have a responsibility to contact parents and say, hey, your kid's been in here seeking some medical help. Your kid has been seeing a counselor, and this is what the counselor is saying about your child's welfare. The kid is 18. The state recognizes the child as an adult. Does the parent have a right to know what's happening in the young adult's life? We'll be right back. Now you have a Bosch filling in for the ailing Ursula Roy team. All righty. What is this music? What are you doing in there?
It's Blondie.
Really?
Atomic.
There you go.
I like it. All right. I forgot that colleges don't send report cards home. There is a letter that allow the child to sign, the child being the 18-year-old kid. It's consent to allow your grades to be shared with parents. And it's normally it's an optional sort of thing that the college may or may not offer.
Yeah.
The parents don't know what's happening academically with their kid. Maybe they talk to them once a week, or maybe they text every other day, or perhaps they see each other only during the holidays. But how's the child's mental state? The story comes out of a small college. It was a Hamilton College.
Yeah. In Clinton, New York.
Yeah, the mom ended up going to the dormitory after the son had hung himself. And she starts to look around. She's sort of putting things together, and she's closing up shop. And she, as they describe in the article, she's walking through sort of a haze of grief and things that she must do. It wasn't until she picked up the kid's journal
right.
that then she realized, oh, now I see what's happening. What was in the journal, Tom?
Well, he was just talking about what a hard time he was having. He was flunking out of three of his four classes. He considered himself, quote, a failure with no life prospects. He was having trouble sleeping. He was missing classes. He was turning in assignments late. And his life just was felt like he was failing at life. Now, he had gone. It wasn't that this was got a lot of kids, you know, just sort of, you know, become so interior that they didn't. It's not that he didn't wasn't contacted. He did reference he had on his desk the day he died. He had a counselor's number and his advisor's number and all of that. And once she saw his the mom saw the diary, she decided, well, listen, the school clearly knew a lot more than I thought. And so she got emails among the school this and part of their investigation. Among the various people, and in fact, his advisor says, you know, can we, is there a way, can we tell his, you know, whatever his name is, I forget, Burton, can we tell his parents? I know if I was a parent, I think I would like to know that information. His advisor said this, but the university principal, in fact, it's in law, in effect, that you are, the state sees you as an adult, and so that is, that if you do something, it's an invasion of privacy of that particular student's individuality, to then contact the parents about, oh, let's say he got an STD. The student is not going to want his parents to know, and the parents don't have any right. At what point can you contact the student's parents if they're having a tough time?
Mm-hmm.
And so this just brings up, this is true of colleges all around the country. In fact, at MIT, one of the best schools in the country, there was a 2009 suicide. The parents brought suit against MIT. They ended up losing that suit. They said, well, no, the suicide was not the responsibility of the university. But in that ruling, the judge said, but that doesn't mean that the school might not be liable if the factors were somehow different, that mm-hmm. if it was seen as clearly suicidal and they told somebody at the school that it was suicidal, you then had some responsibility perhaps. So this just raises this whole issue of how much do you want, if you're the parent, I think we always want to know what our kids are doing,
mm-hmm.
but what if the kids don't want, you know, you to know? What if you come out as gay at the university and then you're having troubles not necessarily as a result of it, but troubled at the university, and then the university tells your parents about that fact. That could destroy a kid in the other way. They say sometimes parents are the problem,
mm-hmm.
and the kids are better off without that kind of contact. It raises all sorts of heartbreaking issues.
But I would say legally, the university with a cover your ass attitude doesn't want the liability, because once they start to let the parents know, hey, we're concerned about your child, who then bears responsibility for the child's actions?
Right.
So it's the old ice machine not working in the restaurant. If you know that there's a problem and you don't fix the problem and someone slips and falls on the ice, now you're liable. If the college recognizes the child's mental state as being fragile and could possibly do something to harm himself, now the college is, in effect, part of the problem for that kid. The college sort of having a see no evil, hear no evil attitude, where they don't tell the parent that they're aware of the problem. They do help the kid. The kid went to
yes.
get some mental counseling and things
yes.
like that. But the college never took the next step, which is to be a party to the actions that the child is taking.
Okay, so first off, though, I think that it's not an unnecessarily negative view of colleges and their approach to this, because a lot of colleges feel very responsible. It's not a good look for a school to have a lot of suicides on your campus. So I think that if you think of it as just sort of a bottom line CYA approach, that might not be fair. It might be, though. But again, they are operating. There's something called the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act.
Mm-hmm.
That's a federal law. Now, the Congress can overturn that law. But the way it stands now, that is what the universities are forced to acknowledge or forced to operate under, and that justifies they're not, the law views students as adults, and so they can't do anything they don't have permission from. Now, if you're a parent, you can get your student to
sign
away. They say, listen, please, if there's a situation where you feel like I'm at risk to myself or my health or mental health is it, please go ahead and contact my parents. The students can do that beforehand. But another thing they said is that the bar is too low for universities to have to clear to contact parents. They say that it could have the opposite effect. It actually could discourage kids from even coming forward for help.
That makes sense.
Because they realize, oh, if I go to this counselor, you know, because I'm having stress problems or love problems or whatever, then maybe that'll get back to my parents. It's not even worth going there. Mm-hmm. Then you're on your own. So it's really a real dilemma. When my first daughter went to a school, she went to Roger Williams in Rhode Island. The weird thing is that there was a bridge that was like within 3 or 4 miles of the university, and was always kind of seen as like suicide bridge that kids, you know, from any of the universities there or in the area, they would use that. It was always kind of seen as sort of a joke and a threat. And I thought, wow, yeah, that is you want to know what your kid is up to. You want to do everything you can to protect your kid. If the kid is, you know, on the other side of the country, I would certainly hope that you'd have a good enough communication with your kid to allow for that kind of contact. But you're right. I can't remember when I saw my kids. It didn't even occur to me, my kids' grades. I would talk to her, and I would know how she was doing, but I don't think I ever did see a transcript, and there we don't have access to this transcript, even though we're paying for the
education.
That
was the thing my dad said, because I said, they're my grades. And he goes, because of my money.
Yes.
So I want to see them.
Yeah.
And then you have to turn them over every quarter whenever you got them. And,
okay, so you did, huh?
Well, I wanted, and then after a while, he was so disgusted, he didn't want to see him anymore.
depressed him.
He promised me 4 years. He said, I'll pay for 4 years, whatever you do with it, you do with it, and then done, and there's the money, and I've already saved it so you can have it. Cornell, I didn't go to Cornell, but I went to Ithaca College, which is right next to Cornell, one of my other colleges I attended town.
Uh-huh.
And they had a suicide bridge, same exact situation.
Is that right?
Yeah, Cornell's got a lot of suicides, and they've got the gorges there in Ithaca.
Oh,
and they have, I think they had petitioned, Cornell had asked Ithaca, New York, to put something in, a higher rail to stop people from climbing over killing themselves.
It's a vulnerable time for kids. I mean, they're 18, 19, the first time for a lot of them living away from home.
Yeah.
It can be really tough.
I went to the counselor because my diet had gotten so bad, I didn't realize it affected my brain. All I was eating was Snickers bars and drinking coffee. Because I didn't want to spend the money on the, I told my dad to save money. I don't want the cafeteria plan. I was just eating Snickers bars and drinking coffee. And after about like 4 weeks, I found myself in the mental institution. The guy's like, what'd you have for breakfast? Snickers bar. And what do you eat all day? I got to do coffee and Snickers bars.
You know, you haven't changed in all these years, John. You now eat 5 peanut butter jelly sandwiches because it's going to save me money. And
it is saving me money. Saving me money.
But it's clearly affecting your brain.
Absolutely. But I'm richer for it.
Yeah.
We'll take a break and come back.
Fancy coffin.
Thank you. That's right. I'm going to buy a really nice coffin. I hope you're there at my funeral with your head in a jar. Get your seat right down front so you can see.
I need a microphone.
By the way, when your head is in the jar, isn't your mouth in liquid? Aren't you in some sort of formaldehyde?
Yeah, I would guess. I have a scream.
What would you sound like?
I'd sound like Bane in that Batman movie.
We'll be right back. It was, I think, last week, the Boy Scouts of America made news that they're dropping the boys because they want to make sure that girls can come into scouting as well. So it's a Scouts of America.
Yeah, BS. Scouts BS for something like this. Isn't that what it is? BSA, maybe? I mean, the idea is that they're keeping...
BSA is Boy Scouts of America.
Yeah,
right?
But they're keeping that little tag.
Uh-huh.
So, but you don't know what the BS stands for.
So... girls can have their own thing because girl power and girl this and girl that. So you can still have the Girl Scouts. But boys can't have their own group.
No, they can. They don't have enough boys. And so the girls are mad at the Boy Scouts right now because the Boy Scouts allow for the Girl Scouts to be in their group because they've lost something like a quarter of their membership since 2000.
And so
they're trying to get more girls in to buoy the Boy Scouts of America.
Well, they have us lost because of the move. They just lost an additional 425,000 members.
That's right. And that's because of the Mormons. But that's not because they're not responding just to the fact that they allowed in girls. This has been a bigger issue that's been sort of fomenting. The Mormons make up the biggest single individual group in all of Boy Scouts. So there's something like 18.5% of Boy Scouts are Mormons. Mm-hmm. And that when you sign up in the church, the Mormon church, they automatically sign up for Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
So they have been a huge part of it. But because they object to all sorts of the issues. They say for the last 20 years, there's been this slow division between the Boy Scouts and the Mormons. It started with the idea of accepting gay Boy Scouts, mm-hmm. and then transgender Boy Scouts. And this last thing is with girls. But they feel like they're on different kind of moral planes. So the Mormon Church is reasoning that there are more Mormons outside the United States, mm-hmm. than within the United States. So what they want to do is they want to set up a gospel-focused youth program themselves,
yeah.
and create it worldwide. I don't know if they'll have uniforms, but they're going to use the model of the Boy Scouts, but apply it to Boy Scouts, to, I don't know what they'd be called, Mormon Scouts or something, a gospel-based Mormon youth group.
Do you think that there's an advantage to single-sex organizations, whether it's a single-sex school, all-girls school, all-boys school, yeah. all-boys club, all-girls club?
I think there can be, yeah.
No, yes or no? Is it?
I just said yes, I think it can be.
It can be.
It can be worse. If you create something and it's an exclusive boys club, say at Amazon, and you're not allowing girls, I think that would be detrimental.
I understand that. That's in a work environment. I'm just saying a club that you can join,
yeah.
that there's or a school. So there's an advantage to having all girls in all girls school. I just think you get the guys out of there, it changes the entire dynamics of how they spend their time.
I can see that. Yes.
And the same thing with boys. You get a bunch of 13-year-old boys, you get girls in the class. Mm-hmm. I went to all boys school every mm-hmm. single year I was in school, except when I got into college. So the idea that a Boy Scouts allowed just boys in, the boys react to each other differently. The experience is different when you don't have a girl in the group.
Yes, but John, I think you're suggesting that society is forcing Boy Scouts to include girls. That's not it at all. They were doing this. The world had no problem with having Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts. The Boy Scouts are trying to pick off Girl Scouts because they realize we are losing our numbers. We need Girl Scouts. And this wasn't a social demand that Boy Scouts allow in girls.
I know, but I think you shoot yourself in the foot because if you're losing members, if you're losing customers, so to speak, then do something in order to sell and market what you have as an advantage to boys.
Yes,
because then when all you let the girls in, it changes the dynamics of how everybody experiences scouting.
That's fine. So not everybody, because one of the things they interviewed, one of the pushes was from the parents. Uh-huh. Why did the parents want the Girl Scouts to be in the Boy Scouts or the girls being in the Boy Scouts? Because they already have two brothers that are in the Boy Scouts. They already know that they go into, they know that routine. It's all in the family. And rather than having to go to a separate organization, they wanted to be able to have their daughters go to the same place as their sons.
I understand
that's what they
that.
Said the push was.
I know.
And so they were responding because there were a lot of girls being cut out of that. This wasn't a social thing. Oh, the world will be a better place if we mix girls and boys in scouting. That's not what it was about.
I understand because the parent complained, hey, I've got to drop off one kid here and drop off. But
that's
you know what?
Right.
For the sanctity of the fact that the organization is single sex in this because it's a different experience
that's
when that's happening.
That's good. Believe me, the Girl Scouts of America would prefer that. So you're just disagreeing with the Boy Scouts' decision to allow for girls.
Yeah, you should have sold it better rather than saying, hey, we need to get different customers in here.
Okay, now that's something entirely different than why the Mormon Church is leaving them.
I know,
they're leaving them for social reasons.
Yeah, they didn't like the fact that they got all up in arms when the person was self-identifying as a boy and wanted to be in the Boy Scouts, and the Boy Scouts let them in. Wasn't that two or three years ago?
That's right, that happened recently, but also the whole... They're opposed to same-sex marriage as a conservative religion, and they thought that they were getting a little too comfortable with the homosexuality in the Boy Scouts.
Let's see. There's an initiative that someone's trying to get started. It was an editorial in the Seattle Times to kill the job tax. And also Spotify is teaming up with the Southern Poverty Law Center to stop free speech.